who runs the nations now? Really? Really want to know? No, it's not the Pope. Please. No, it's not even the Jews. No. Think bigger. No, not God. Not that big. Well, true, yes. God does run the nations, absolutely speaking. But let's take a step down. Satan. Yeah, the dragon. Satan. And the dragon comes up in the unveiling, chapter 12. Hello, everyone. Martin Zender here. Going to give you some great bad news today. Well, it's bad news for the entire world, but it's actually not bad news to you. Because, look, we take these things in the unveiling, and we have the audacity to make it all good news. I've heard many of you say to me, Martin, I get so excited when I see the news and all the disasters and the terrorism and the death. And the thing is, I know what they mean. They don't mean that they like to see people die and they like disasters and death. But I know you out there because you're just like me. You're like, let's get this thing done with. And so when you see these crises coming upon the scene, you actually get happy about it. Not happy, but excited. Sure, that word works for me. You get excited about it. And I do too. So the dragon, who we're going to be studying about next in detail, is the real ruler of the nations now. Satan is the god of this eon. 2 Corinthians 4, verse 4. Starting with verse 3. If our evangelist covered, Paul writes to the Corinthians, it is covered in those who are perishing, in whom the god of this eon blinds the apprehensions of the unbelieving. That's all I need from that verse right now. The god of this eon, small g. This corresponds perfectly with the dragon and Satan, because the dragon is the sign of Satan here. And we know that when our Lord was tempted at the Temple Mount, took him up to the roof, the pinnacle of the temple, and he was offered all the kingdoms of the world. By who? Who offered him that? Satan did. How could Satan do that? And why didn't the Lord say, what do you mean you're offering me these nations? I own these nations. Well, the deed had been passed over to Satan. No, not for the heck of it. For a demonstrative purpose. Or we might say a demonstration. A demonstration of the futility of human rule. And of course, it's animated by Satan. We're going to see this especially in the next section, that heavenly powers, both good and evil, animate humanity on earth. And the governments of the earth are run by Satan. We know that the religions are run by four different demons. There's a demon in charge of Hinduism. There's a demon in charge of Buddhism. There's a demon in charge of Islam. And there's a really big, hairy, smelly demon in charge of Christianity. The four religions of the earth, they animate these religions. And so the serpent is now in position in this sign of the unveiling 12 to devour the offspring of the woman when she should produce. But this doesn't happen because there comes an immediate and powerful intervention on the part of God. Isn't that nice? There's an intervention on the part of God. But why is it? Well, I can answer this question for you, but first I'll ask it. Why is it that God waits to the time when an intervention is necessary? He could easily spare you the trouble of needing and praying for and being desperate for an intervention. And yet, he brings us to the brink and over it, and over it. I know what you're going through. And over it, so it seems to us, then comes the rescue. It's like you're falling from the cliff, and before you hit the ground, he waits till then to rescue you. Because at that point, you're completely desperate and helpless. So this woman is giving birth to a child, and there's Satan at the door, the dragon in the sign, standing there waiting to devour, like a sicko dog, a beast with fangs and claws. Aren't there birds that hang around on the oceans when the turtles go out to sea to do their, to lay their eggs. They come, that's right, they come in from the sea to lay their eggs. And these birds know when it's happening. They're going, 6 o'clock, time for the turtles. And they swoop down and they hard boil, fry, mash, and poach those poor turtle eggs because they know. Well, Satan knows the times and the eras. It's the time and the era. And what is that? Now, that was a parrot. But, you know, it could be a bird of prey, any bird of prey. But God is a last-minute rescue, a last-second rescue. And this is our rescue as well. That's why I claim that everybody in the body of Christ is going to be going through some strait, some trial before our snatching away. They're separated from the mass of the nation, and they flee into the wilderness, and they're sustained by divine power. Allow me another analogy with us. They're separated from the mass of the nation, the apostate nation, and they flee into the wilderness and are sustained by divine power in a place where the dragon does not dare follow them. And that is in the wilderness. And this happened in Egypt when Israel was delivered from Egypt. It was then there was a miracle of water that saved them. They're backed up. Talk about a rock in a hard place. The rock is the Egyptian army. The hard place is the Red Sea. God parts the waters via Moses' staff, and Israel walks dry shod across the Red Sea, escaping the Egyptians, who are then killed. This time they're going to be saved by another miracle. Not sure specifically what that is, but here's the analogy. They're taken into a wilderness. Where are you today? Where are you? I know you're in a city. Some of you may live in the wilderness, but it's an allegorical wilderness I'm talking about here. We're in a wilderness where we feel so alone, where we sometimes feel that everything is conspiring against us, our friends, our loved ones, our boss at work. Nothing's going our way. This is the wilderness. And yet, I had a meal with a wonderful gentleman 4 nights ago named Ryan, lives in Cleveland. This was the second time I ate with him. Great guy. And he has been going through some terrible trials. The poor dude could hardly walk. He's taking care of his elderly father. He suffered great loss in his life otherwise, besides what I just told you. And he told me this. He says, Martin, just when I think that I'm done, just when I'm contemplating leaving this world by my own hand, God provides some kind of miracle and I get by another day. I said, I hear you, bro. You may have heard me share this tale. I remember one winter when I worked for the Postal Service, I was riding my bicycle to work 11 miles and back 11 miles in the dead of winter in Ohio. Because I had wrecked my car. This was 1991. Some guy ran a stop sign. I was on my way to work 5 in the morning. This is kind of a prequel to the story I'm sharing with you. On my way to work, 5 a.m., I'm going 55 miles an hour on a 2-lane country road. A guy runs the stop sign. Of course, he's traveling perpendicular to my road. He's on Walnut Road. I'm on Boutonville Road, en route from Greenwich, Ohio to Willard, Ohio, where I worked at the Postal Service. He runs the stop sign, smashes into my car. We had a combined speed of 100 miles an hour. And I, ladies and gentlemen, could easily have died. If I had hit him square, we're both dead. At that speed, if I had hit him square into that car, we're both dead. But because God is God, he made sure I hit him at the rear quarter panel of his car. My car, of course, then, due to the centrifugal force, spun around. How many times, I do not know. I was listening to Peg on the radio by Steely Dan. I remember that distinctly, that the song Peg was playing. And I'm waiting to die because the car keeps moving. I'm staring at the hood of my car, which has popped up out of its proper place. And the car's still moving, and I'm thinking, I'm done. I knew there was a bridge nearby. I'm going to hit the bridge. It's a wall of concrete. I'm done. My car stops. I'm still alive. A man came out of the house about 10 minutes later and said the sound of that crash brought him straight up in his bed. Just sat up like a bomb had gone off. The guy in the other vehicle thought I was dead because I didn't come out of my car right away because I wanted to hear the rest of Peg. That's actually not true. I was trying to ascertain the condition of my frame, not my car's frame, my frame, these bones and whatnot. And I was fine, so I got out of the car, and a guy hugged me. He was like, he kissed me, practically worshipped at my feet because he thought he'd killed me. His brakes had gone dead. Anyway, that's the reason I was bicycling to work, because my car was shot, and I took the insurance money. Instead of buying a new car, another stupid car, I bought a fancy bicycle with a big light, and I bought electronic heaters for my feet, and I had giant mittens, and I had a windshield, a wind fairing on that bike, and by golly, I rode to work in the winter. I have not forgotten my main point here. Thanks for hanging in there with me. 6 months I rode in the slush and in the mud and in the wind and the rain and the snow. I fell down a couple times. During that 6 month period, I fell asleep one time on my bike. My coworkers laughed their heads off at that. I fell asleep. I almost hit a deer one day on my bicycle, mind you. But anyway, it was so grim, so dreary, so drab and depressing that I was just like cursing God one day. Kind of like Job's wife. I was talking to myself, Zender, curse God and die. But instead of, you know, and then this was on the way home from work. So I remember I looked up in my depression and I saw three ducks flying in perfect formation across the sky. And I said, all right, God, I'll give you another day. That was God's perfect rescue at the perfect time. With the perfect display for a sensitive soul such as myself, because I don't require lights and visions and sounds from heaven. I don't require 70 virgins or 72 or whatever the Islamists are looking forward to. Three ducks flying in formation, right when I look up, suggesting the perfection of God. That was enough for me. That was deliverance. You might call it 11th hour deliverance. I wasn't at the total end of my rope, but I have been there before. And my friend Ryan has been there. And you've been there. Much worse situations than that. And I've shared some of these times in my life with you. A time when I had a metal letter opener over my heart. And I was talking at the same time to Clyde Pilkington on the other end, who God used to rescue me. The dragon is no match for the care of God. He's no match for the timing of God. And God puts us smack up against these things. I didn't have to hit that other car. That guy could have gone through the intersection. I marvel with you that I didn't strike that car in the middle of the car because we would both have been dead. Good thing I struck the rear quarter panel. Why did I have to strike it at all? God did it on purpose. It was a close call to show me how near he is and how real his care is. And those ducks were the same thing. How near he is, how near his care is. And so don't be shocked when the serpent is ready or the dragon is ready to devour the offspring. Satan wants to devour you. He desires to sift you like wheat. But our God is greater than Satan. He's greater in every circumstance, but we wouldn't know that unless God in his sovereignty, in his perfect interplay of good and evil, brings us face to face with it, puts us in peril. It's only then that we know he's always there. So don't wait to get into that peril to appreciate that fact. He's always there, and certainly he's with us now.